Hi, and welcome to The Art of Relating. This is installment number 8. Remember, the podcasts of all the installments are available at dynskills.com. That's dynskills.com, where you can listen to any of the previous broadcasts. And there are also books and workshops and trainings on the subject of the art of relating, what we call their effective humanistic interaction skills training. This is Zach Schwartz, your host. I'm a psychologist out in the world. On the radio, we're just learning a set of concepts and skills together. And remember, my job is to share the concepts and skills of healthy relating, and your job is to internalize and integrate those skills, actually get them into your head, the ones you agree with, of course, and to start practicing them to improve all of your relationships, both in business and at home. If you have questions and comments about the show, you can write me at Zach at kepw.org, and I would be glad to answer or discuss the points that you make in the following program. Remember, last week we defined a healthy relationship of equals as two or more people choosing to hang out together, neither one of them has to, and acting in mutual respect because each demands that, that's called assertiveness, and each offers that, that's called consideration. Last week we talked about some of the elements of being assertive: personal power, independence, recognized self-value, etc., to negotiate or set limits with someone you're in a relationship with. This week, I wanted to talk about consideration and what are the elements, concepts, and skills involved in being considerate. Remember, each of our realities is different, so when you're in a relationship with someone, their reality is always necessarily going to be different than yours, because your reality is built of the maps you make of your experiences, and your maps are not the same as anyone else's. They're equally worthy of respect and consideration, but they're different, because our projections are different, and our sensations are different, and our experiences are different. So our collection of maps or experiences in our brains is the reality that each of us is living with, one different from another. Of course, hopefully there's some overlap, and we can compensate and be respectful of each other. And that's what consideration is about, is being respectful of the world or reality that the other person or persons have. One of the skills of consideration, which is important to master, is called perception checking. When you tell me something, I make a map of what you said in my head. Therefore, I remember it. But when I make the map, of course, I leave things out, I add things in, I change things around. So my map of what you said is not exactly the same as what you said. So I read that map back to you, that's perception checking, to see if I got it right. And got it right means that you would agree, more or less, that's what you said. If I feed this map back to you, and remember, I only know what I heard, not what you said. And you don't know what you said, but you totally know what you intended to say, and that's what we're trying to get to, what you intended to say. So if I perception check and I say, here's my map, this is what I understood you to say, was that what you were trying to say? If you say yes, then you know I heard you and I know I heard you, and we continue from there. If you say no, you get to go again. I erase and re-record. Remember, no one knows what the other person intended to say but them. And one secret of perception checking is remembering the working assumption, we've been over those in previous installments, that person is what I call a hero in their own movie, which means whatever they're sharing, it's going to be in the background of they're a good person trying to do good things. So if I want to perception check someone accurately, I want to be sure I consider that assumption that they're a good person trying to do good things. So, for example, I come up to someone who's, shooting a shotgun out the window here into the street. I say, tell me what's going on so I can understand. They say, I'm protecting us from a Martian invasion. I say, oh, I get it. You're telling me that there's Martians attacking the building and you're trying to defend us. They say, yeah, that means not that Martians are attacking the building. That only means that I understand what they're sharing with me accurately enough that they can confirm that that's what they said. That is the essence of perception checking. Now, my partner and I have a contract called an active listening contract, and that agreement means that anytime anyone wants, they can ask for a perception check to see if they're being understood correctly. So if she says, did you hear me? And I say, yeah, I heard you. And she says, active listening check. Then I feed back my map of what she said to see if it's right. Again, if it's right, she knows I heard her and I understood. If it's wrong, then she gets to go again. I erase and re-record, and I perception check again until she says, yes, that's what I was trying to say. Remember, you never know what somebody said. You only know what you heard. Keep it subjective and let them change it. Remember that second working assumption. They know themselves better than you do. The third one, by the way, was that they're being sincere. Always assume sincerity, that they know themselves best, and that they're a hero, see themselves as a good person trying to do good things. And remember, if you want consideration, you have to have rapport. That is to make sure the person's listening before you start speaking. So, for example, at the fair I work at, we use radios. I don't get on the radio and say, John, I need help at both 450. No. I say, this is Zach calling John. Are you listening? Do we have rapport? Are you with me? My partner comes down in the morning. She talks to me. I'm reading the paper. By the time I realize that she's talking to me, I get that I've gotten nothing. And then she says, active listening, please. And I say, please start again. I wasn't recording. Now, if she came in the room and said, I have something to say, and I put the paper down and I give her my attention, then there's a good chance I'll hear it and can feed it back fairly accurately. But that's up to her to decide. But I have to have rapport, which means we're in connection. I'm coming to her with something, or she to me, and I'm getting a response. That's rapport. Then I can continue from there into active listening and sharing our realities and understanding each other. So I have to hear and understand, and I can check it through feedback, what the other person's world looks like on whatever we're talking about. And I can understand and make sure I understand by practicing active listening and giving my attention to what he or she is telling me. But that's not enough for consideration. I also have to be empathetic. Empathy is caring about the other person. It's putting your hearts together. It's letting them know that I've had similar emotional experiences, and most importantly, that they're not alone with their emotional experience at this moment. I'm with them and caring. I may not have had the same experience, but I certainly have had a rainbow of emotions in my life. We all have, and we can find those and relate to each other on that level. So if I'm talking to, say, an opiate addict, I don't have to have been an opiate addict to care about and understand what they're feeling, because they might feel guilty, they might feel sad, they might feel frightened, they might feel out of control. Well, at different moments of my life, I have felt all those things, not from being drug addicted maybe, but from other experiences that I've had. So we all share a broad set of emotions, and if I can understand this person's emotions and care about them and have had similar emotions and let them know that I am with them and supportive of those feelings, that's all included in what I would call empathy. Now remember, back in installment number 3, we talked about being light and turning on what I call your Obi-Wan self, or the part of you that's 14 billion years old, that we all share a soul. We're all made of light, and the light interacts on that level. And remember also that we want you to ground before you start any interaction. I highly recommend that. If part of your grounding is to turn on that awareness, become aware of your own soul and the light that you are instantly connected to all people and all things. And from that state of being, empathy is instantaneous. You won't even have to think about it. The caring you can give and relating to someone heart to heart can easily come from that place. If you have trouble with that concept, you can still get grounded and centered and relaxed, and you can still offer empathy to any human, because we're all humans, we're all imperfect, we all have emotions, and all those emotions are deserving of being valued and being cared about. So far in the practice of consideration, we've talked about perception checking, active listening, being empathetic. That's an important beginning, but it's still not enough. Now I want to talk to you a little about validating what someone is sharing, validating their world, and that takes some practice and work, and relies on many of the concepts we've already spoken of. In the 60s, we used to say, your feelings are valid, you should always validate someone's feeling. That wasn't like stamping their parking ticket, validate parking. No, validate means something in psychology that's very specific. And it's an essential part of being considerate. When you validate someone, you're letting them know that you've made the connection between what they're doing and feeling and what their world, their maps, look like. When you let them know that you've made that connection, then you're validating what they've shared. Everything that someone else feels or does or says will always make a kind of sense in terms of the maps, their reality that they're living in. If I take what they say or feel or do, and I put those into my reality, they may be very difficult to make sense of. But if I understand those things in terms of their maps, then they will make a kind of sense, and that's how I can validate somebody. Now, back in the 1950s, when I was growing up, if I was sitting in a chair in the dining room, frightened and crying, my parents would be likely to say, there's nothing to be afraid of, there's nothing to cry about, go out and sweep the garage, you know. And those kinds of responses, by today's standards, is what we call invalidating. If I didn't have a reason to be afraid or cry in my world, in my reality, then I wouldn't be afraid and I wouldn't be crying. So in today's world, in the, say, 90s or millennia, when I was raising my kids, if I saw them frightened and crying, sitting in a chair, I would make some contact, get rapport, give them some love after I grounded myself, and ask them what's going on. That begins an interaction which validates them, because I'm asking them what their reality looks like right now so I can understand their fear and understand their tears in their terms, not mine. That's validation. So if they say, here's what's going on with me and here's why I'm frightened and here's why I'm crying, and I say, oh, I get it, and I feed it back, perception checking, you know. So you're frightened because of this and you're crying because of that. Do I understand you correctly? Yes. And I put my arm around him and say, I understand. I get the connection between your reality and your tears, or your reality and your fears. And that is a validating response, which tends to work better for parenting, for human relations, for having people feel respected and considerate. And remember, these are concepts and skills that relate to being considerate. I have to understand, I have to empathize, I have to validate. Now, another part of consideration is to make sure that the other person's reality is respected in whatever resolutions we come to, whatever we negotiate, whatever we come up with for solutions to a problem, that solution should respect their reality as it was shared, enough that they understand, enough that they feel respected and cared about, enough that they feel good about the solution or resolution that we've reached. Now remember the four process agendas or kind of dances that we can do when we communicate in a relationship. There are only four. There's venting, just sharing. If someone is just sharing and you want to be considerate, then all you've got to do is listen and perception check and empathize and validate. Be receptive to whatever they're sharing, and that's all you've got to do if all they're doing is venting. If they're requesting something, then you have to, again, feedback and understand what they're asking you for and respond as appropriately as you can to that question, at the end of which you can ask, did you get what you needed? Is that an answer to your question? Checking in like that and checking out like that at the end of an interaction will help you gain clarity and resolve the issues at hand. The others, process dance-wise, include negotiating and limit setting. If someone's negotiating, they're raising an issue that affects both of you, and we're finding a solution we can both live with. Remember, assertive is making sure I get a solution that I can live with, and considerate is making sure the solution is something that they also can live with, as well as answering the question on the floor. So if you take apart the mechanics of negotiating, you get some simple steps, which I'll review with you now because they're part of learning to be considerate. Picture a baseball diamond, you know, first, second, third, and home, baseball diamond. Second base, top of the diamond, is the first step in the negotiation, which is called, what's the question on the floor, specifically? What question are we trying to answer in this particular negotiation? Now, that's important because, first of all, people are often, when they check it with each other, surprised to find that they had two different topics in mind. So we'd like to get it down to one topic. Both topics matter, and we can put them in some order and deal with them as two separate agenda items. But we'd really like one question to negotiate a resolution to that we all agree that that's the question. So identifying the question on the floor is an important piece. The second step, that's first base and third base in the baseball diamond, is what do the two, using two as an example, could be more than two, but what do the two worlds or realities look like about that question? What are your thoughts? What are your feelings? What are your perceptions about the situation that we're negotiating? And we have to let each other know that we understand those by perception checking, that we empathize with those by caring about each other and caring about each other's feelings, that we can validate each other really helps to clarify and share and respect the positions that are shared. Once we both feel understood and we both feel like we understand the other one and that we've been understood, then we can move to what I call home plate or resolution. What would answer the question and be respectful to each of the worlds shared, no matter how different they are, and be doable generally with the resources we have, being practical. So it has to answer the question, it has to be practical, and it has to show respect for the variety of worlds shared in the interaction. Then there's a matter of what I call planning, which is what's going to put that resolution into action and into completion. And without a plan, the best resolutions often don't get acted upon. So there has to be nuts and bolts. Who's going to do what? When is it going to happen? How is it going to happen? We have to work out, again, with mutual respect, those things. And then finally, we can review the resolution and the plan and the question on the floor and see if each person involved understands and is satisfied, if everyone is satisfied, we have a plan and we have a resolution and we can move forward. If everyone is not satisfied, then we have to go back and edit at any of those levels. Sometimes someone says, I think that wasn't the right question on the floor. And with a sigh, we can go back to the beginning and say, okay, so what's the question on the floor? And we can start from there. Sometimes I don't think my world was heard or cared about or included enough. So I've got to go back and make that sort of addition or amendment or correction. Sometimes there's something wrong with the resolution or the plan. Like I'm supposed to go to the hardware store and buy a flagpole, but I have a trauma about hardware stores and I get phobic when I go in there. So that's not a good part of the plan. I get to make adjustments, in other words, in any of those stages until we go back and re-summarize and say, okay, now here's the question. Now here's the resolution. Now here's the plan. And when everyone involved says, yeah, I got it and we can do it, then we're done. And that sort of resolution works better. When people feel respected and cared about, they tend to have more motivation for successfully carrying out the resolution and the plan. So that helps and everybody feels supported. And remember, that process is often more important than content. So whatever the question on the floor is, and in whatever we resolve, if we treated each other with respect and care and empathy in the process of working this out, then we're going to have a pretty good day or a pretty good moment or an improved experience regardless of the content outcome. And so there's a lot to this business of being considerate. We've talked about active listening, and if you understand it and how to do perception checks, it takes some practice to get used to doing it. And remember, you can offer the agreement. If I'm interacting with someone, they can ask me for a perception check anytime, and I'm more than glad to share it, nothing to lose, and make sure that I understood them correctly and to their satisfaction, and continue to offer empathy and consideration and respect about that world. Always offer empathy as much as you can, caring, love, the oneness that becomes from both being human and sharing the same light and sharing the same soul and struggling through life on this planet. At times it's a struggle together. And validation. Remember, I can let someone know that I get the connection between their actions and their reality. And when I deliver that message, they feel validated, which is usually a good idea. And finally, to make sure that any action taken in a negotiation, whenever we move forward on a project together, we're considerate of each other. That is to say, each world gets respected in the solutions that we develop. This is purely how it works in a relationship of equals. But some relationships, in certain ways, are not relationships of equals. And that changes the application of these principles. I think they're still there and they still work, but they don't come out exactly the same in a vertical relationship. In other words, if you own a lemonade stand and you hire me at $10 an hour to work in the lemonade stand, then in a specific defined way, we have a vertical relationship. You own it and I work for you. You're paying me, in essence, to give you that power. So if you say, let's replace all the lemonade glasses today, I say, yes, ma'am, how do you want that done? And she says, well, go to the store, you're on the clock, pick up, you know, a couple of dozen new glasses and bring them back to the lemonade stand. And I say, okay, I'm on it, you know, and I take off to complete the task. But if she comes to me and she says, let's be partners, we will invest as equals and run this lemonade stand together. So if we're partners, equals, in this lemonade stand, and she comes to me and says, go to the hardware store and buy a couple of dozen new glasses, I might say, well, first, you're not the boss of me, and second, I don't think we need new glasses. Uh-oh. See, without a boss, that becomes a much trickier interaction, negotiation, How do we function together like that? Again, vertical structures are simpler in some ways because one brain, one reality dictates what's going on. But if there's more than one, if we are equal partners, then it's particularly important to understand the concepts and skills involved in the art of relating, because we're going to need them to continue as partners. I'm sure you've all noticed how people can be best friends for an indefinite period of time as long as they're not sharing any responsibility of substance. But the second they share an animal, or they go into business, or they rent a place together, or they get married, suddenly they're having to negotiate things that matter to each of them. And all these skills and concepts we're talking about apply and have to get internalized and integrated if we're going to keep getting along. So best friends, often when they decide to share a business or share a place to live, challenge that friendship. Suddenly it's not so easy to get along. As long as they're just going to the movies or going to the beach together or spending the afternoon, there's really not much to argue about. But if they're sharing a home or sharing a business or marriage or children, big important things, then they better have some skill and training in negotiating and setting limits and understanding how all that works. It can be done, and it's a beautiful way to get along as equals, but don't take it for granted. It requires some work and some training to have the skills both to be assertive and considerate without being codependent or narcissistic or aggressive, because those things obviously don't feel very good to anybody. So, write in with your questions. Remember to keep practicing. You should be grounding all the time. I'm going to review that a little next time. Getting centered, finding Obi-Wan, using the skills, and remember the active listening contract. And if someone feels like they're not understood or they're not being heard, be more than willing to share a perception check and to erase and re-record if they don't think that that's what they were trying to say. Remember, you never know what they said. You only know what you heard. Oh, and one final note. Remember, if John tells me something and I go home tonight and my wife says, "What did John tell you?" my standard answer is, "I don't know. I can tell you what I heard, but when I heard it, I made a map in my head and I changed what he said, not meaning to. And if I change it again from my map into words to tell you about it, that's going to change it again. And then you're going to hear my words and make a map out of it, and that's going to change it again. So by the time you get back to John and say, "Why did you say this?" John's going to say, "I never said that at all." It's like the telephone game when we're kids. So you can't pass messages without changing them at least a couple of times, getting to the other person. So be careful. Stay subjective. Say, "This is my understanding of what he said." If you want to know what he actually said, good luck. I'm not sure it actually exists. If you want to know what he meant to say, you've got to ask him. He's the only one that would know that. So practice assertion, consideration. We will see you next week, same time, Monday night at 7, or check the website at dynskills.com, dynskills.com. Have a great week.